Friends, as the first speaker pointed out, the subject of our lecture today is other dependence is misery. Today is 15th August, Independence Day. So clearly, this is by way of reflection on Independence Day. India achieved her independence on 15th of August, which is what we call as partial freedom, and freedom from the British Raj. And with that, we got, to a greater extent, the freedom of speech, freedom of movement, freedom to do what we like, some lessening of restrictions, as it were. But we may pause here and ask that when we were under British Raj, were we in any way restricted from being noble, spiritual? And are we today more spiritual and more noble? And the answer will be no. The British Raj may have worked at one level in restricting our freedom in some respect, but that is all on the outer level, not on the inner level. And that's how you have Aristotle saying, you must differentiate between servile status and servile character. Servile state means the state of being in bondage. It may so happen that I am a slave, a servant, someone who is subordinated by another human being. But servile character means I accept that I am under bondage, and therefore I simply make no attempt to, as it were, express my inner nature or develop my inner nature. In other words, Light on the Path says, you could be a slave, like Epictetus. Epictetus was a Greek philosopher, but unfortunately, he was held in bondage, and you can be dragged like him through the streets, and yet you can maintain within you the quiet soul of a philosopher. Nothing prevents you from having your own thoughts. Nothing prevents you from not being affected by your surrounding, by your servile status. You can still hold your views. You can still hold your inner self high. So, we are more interested in that freedom, actually. And therefore, independence would mean this inner kind of independence. And today we find that we are too happy to be independent, and that independence level is rising and rising. And so, as we in Gujarati we say, from swatantrata it is becoming swachandata. To do what I want is my independence. And if we begin with the general level which we see in, we won't include all young people, but most young people, some young people, they are independent in a very different way. They will say, I want my space, which means I don't want my parents to tell me that what time I should come home. I don't want them to interfere and say what I should and should not eat. I should have regular timings for going to sleep and eating, and so on and so forth. This is like a great restriction for them. So inside they are waiting that once they have the financial independence, they would move away. Yes, they would move away, and admirably they would be able to face various challenges of life alone, that we do see many of them moving and having a rented apartment or moving in with a friend or whatever. So that alone life, independent life, they manage very well at one level. And yet you find that, and they find also and realize that they are not yet equipped for emotional independence, you see. And that's how either they will engage in a series of casual affairs, or they will be addicted to drinks and drugs, or they will be constantly on the phone trying to keep connected with friends and people and relatives and whatever. So on the Facebook and on the Twitter and all that. Where is this? Where is this independence? Yes, independence to do what you want is there. But the real independence is that inner independence which also includes not being dependent even emotionally on other people, which we find is not there. And the whole of the human relationship today is in a very, very different state. We do see, especially the younger people coming and saying, you know, I don't have a single close friend. And therefore they say that I cannot open up and tell about my real emotions. I cannot open up and tell about where I am vulnerable or things which have happened to me. Because if I tell and if I am open, then all that I say may be misused. It may be used against me. It may become like I might become an object of ridicule. So I dare not really share my innermost feelings, which is a very sad state in a human relationship. And of course, then as we have seen many times, there is a very warped kind of relationship formed. Someone who is rejected, someone who is not understood says, see, this is because you have relationship with human beings. So why not? I have relationship with my plants, I have relationship with my computer, I have relationship with my pillow. This is a very, very different, unhealthy, unwholesome kind of state in which we have come to, where we have relationship with objects. You come home from office and you say all that happened in the office in front of your plant. We are not joking. There are articles after articles written about people who are now afraid to have human relations. And in the process, aren't we getting isolated? Aren't we getting into a depressed and lonely state? And so on. So, when we talk about independence, it is not to say that there is not going to be dependence on others or another, which is a mistake we make. On the other end of the scale, dependence is inevitable. And so the actual key lies in having a balanced view of independence and a balanced view of dependence. From the time you are born, in one sense, aren't we really dependent? The very fact that we were held by some woman in her womb for 9 months. We were nourished in the womb. And then we were brought out and we got our birth. Again, there was someone who was nourishing, looking after us. They go to the extent of saying that the child who is brought in company of the wolves, as it were, the wolf child, they don't even learn to speak and behave like human beings. They are called wolf children. You see? So there was someone who is guiding you in how to speak, how to walk, what to do to make you human in that sense. But that is an extreme example. But even otherwise, when the student heard this, she was surprised that little baby has to be caressed and cuddled, held against mother's heart, and that affection has to be showered on the baby. If she doesn't get the little baby, then baby dies within few months. Such things don't happen because generally the mother or somebody is caring. But in extreme situation, I was told that the nurses would have big pockets in which the baby would be kept and they would keep caressing and cuddling them. We are bringing this because lest we forget how we are here, not independently. Let us bear in mind from the time that we were in the mother's womb and breathed our first breath, there have been people who have taken care, whether we recognize that help or not. So that dependence. And of course, we can see in the plants, two plants dependent on each other. The classic example of mistletoe growing on oak tree. And we see that mistletoe is deriving on nourishment from the oak tree. And you feel it is one-sided affair. No. We are told oak, which is supposed to last for many, many years. If you remove all the mistletoe from oak, the oak will wither, dry and die away within few months. And they say mistletoe is the heart of the oak. Very strange what is called in science symbiosis, where each is dependent on the other and derives a kind of sustenance from the other. So, this is what we call as interdependence. It is seen in the plans, and let us accept that there is interdependence. But what happens when one plant grows with the support of another plant, literally, and also derives nourishment to the extent that the other plant, therefore, its growth is stunted? This plant gives nothing, and we say in science, it is a parasite. This gives us a very good idea of dependence, and the title, Other Dependence is Misery. There is no running away from the fact that there is dependence on another or other, but then what kind of dependence is the question? Is it symbiosis or is it parasite? When you become parasite emotionally, physically, psychically, intellectually, it is then that it can tend to become a misery of some sort. So, here we find, it is from the laws of Manu, the very first quotation says, everything that depends on others gives pain. Everything that depends on oneself gives pleasure. That means the contrast is not between independence on one hand and dependence on other hand. The contrast is between dependence on oneself and dependence on others to the extent of being a parasite. Now, other dependence. Other, what does it include? And dependence means what? Dependence could mean support, and dependence could also mean attachment. And other would include things, places, and people. If you take other to include, or take other to mean things, then what happens? We are very evidently seeing that when there is dependence on something like grinder, washing machine, it's a real dependence these days, but it is saving our time and energy. But there is a very different kind of dependence when it comes to mobile, when it comes to television. What happens when the grinder mixer is not working for one day, for several days, or even washing machine? You do feel miserable. Slowly, you know, I need to train myself to do it in my own way without the aid of the washing machine or the grinder. I should know how to grind things with kalbatta and not depend on the mixer. Okay, misery is not so deep. But there is a greater misery seen because there is a kind of attachment and addiction when it comes to television and when it comes to mobile. Television set conks off and people feel they have ceased to exist. No TV, one day, 2 days, 3 days. And mobile is not just used for connecting with people. It is for all the time seeing what videos I have received, what messages I have received and what's there. It's some kind of a food for your eye. Some kind of a psychic food. Some pictures, some input keeps on going to the eye. This is something which the senses have got become slaves to. The senses want different things to see. Mind gets attached. But first, even senses have got used to see variety of things on the television, on the mobile screen and so on. Here there is attachment. Your kama manas, in a way, has formed attachment. It is an addiction. And when it is not there, you feel thoroughly miserable. You feel really sometimes as if you have ceased to exist. We've often given example of a boy who used to be all the time on the computer. And then when the computer was not working, he was just banging away on the keys but wouldn't want to shift from there. He's so used to having computer. So this is miserable. We have become dependent in a very different way. These are things. Then places. We require a certain place for study and meditation. And therefore, if you have to go to another place and study and meditate, You feel, how can I meditate? And the answer given is, if you want, you can meditate even in the train while you are traveling. If you want, you can meditate sitting in the park on a bench. Who can do it? The person who has not formed attachment with a place. You see, it's very important that you have a particular place and a particular time for meditation and study, but not be attached to it, not get dependent on it. So this dependency is also going to bring us misery. And then there are places to which we travel. And then there is a need to travel to places. And then you have to, twice in a year, three times in a year, go to certain places, visit certain places. Because you see, it's a humdrum existence. Don't you get bored? I need to unwind myself, and so on and so forth. And still different, as Mr. Crosby says, for even students, there comes a phase where they feel that I wish I could get away alone somewhere for getting peace and quiet. Because I want to get back my psychic balance. And he says, this is not a very good thing. Psychically, if I want my balance, means there is anxiety, there is stress, maybe you don't get along with people in the office and in the family. So there is a constant kind of a rubbing which is happening. And now I want quiet. I want some space, as it were. Do that where you are. You should not be now and then, if not for fun, even to get back your quiet and peace, don't get into the habit of going to a certain place and only then you can get back your shattered peace. Do it surrounded by whatever is the surrounding. So, here again, there is a dependence on place. And thirdly, we come to dependence on people. Dependence on people happens also at several levels. This is something which we have all experienced. Our ayabai for the little child, our servant maids, our cook, we have got dependent on them. It's another matter that because we are working somewhere and we have juggling between house and our career and so on. But is it not true that if supposing the ayabai or the servant maid is not going to come for 15 days or for a longer time, as in lockdown many of us would have experienced, what a dependence we have cultivated to such an extent that we are unable to do the work they are doing, you see, for some of them at least. So it was a great misery because we couldn't do the things, the physical things which we were doing. Probably we were just engaging ourselves only with the intellectual things or doing something which was a little easy, but not all the tasks, including cooking and utensil cleaning and things of that sort. So it was a very, very depressing or very, very miserable experience. And then there is a kind of a blackmailing which will go on. She will say, you increase my pay and if you give me railway pass and so on and so forth. Is it not misery? So that doesn't mean that we will not have the servants. That doesn't mean we will not have Aya. But it means that if supposing I have to do without that person, I should be in a position. While the person doesn't come for 1 or 2 days, I equip myself to carry on. So dependence means in such a way that while they are there, I happily use them. But when they are not there, I can do without them. This is the right kind of dependence. The other is complete parasitical attachment or dependence. Then there is dependence which is coming in terms of intellectuality, in terms of decision making. And this is where the real freedom comes into picture. We talk about I'm free, I make my own decisions. And if you go a little deeper, you find that, is that so? Are you really making a free decision, a free choice? Many times you find that you are someone who are maybe someone who is maybe thinking emotionally, and there is someone else who is thinking rationally, someone else who is seeing situation objectively and a little intuitive. Every now and then I ask that person, should I do this? And the answer comes and I do it. Should I go there? And so on. It's not a question of guru. It's a question of someone who I lean on for making decision, because whatever that person suggests turns out to be absolutely perfect and right. Now I feel I have decided. But really speaking, most of the time in major things, I am turning to that person. Now, it's not as if we are not going to turn to the elders, we are not going to turn to someone who is having more experience, but are we going to be all the time be dependent? And therefore, as Robert Crosby had experienced, when Mr. Judge was around, he said, Mr. Judge would guide me what to do, what not to do in theosophic matters. When he passed away, I suddenly realized I depended and leaned on him too much. And I, in the process, did not develop intuition at all. Now I was at a loss. Imagine his misery as to what to do now. If Mr. Judge was around, he would guide me. But when Mr. Judge was around, if he had, under his little guidance, tried to make his own decision, made mistake, learned from mistake and moved on, then probably he would have been on his own. He would have learned how to make decisions. This is at a very simple level for us. But in other matters as well, we do find the decisions that we make, the choices which we make, we feel that it is my own free choice. But is that so? Really speaking, we find that the choice of career, the choice as to what studies I will follow, the commerce, the arts, the science, engineering, whatever it is, and the kind of job I will take, who is deciding? Those were the days when people chose something else. These are the days when you see more emphasis on commerce, more emphasis on becoming chartered accountants, more emphasis on becoming maybe engineers and doctors. Then there is another field which was just not there before, so open, becoming actors, actresses, actresses, sports personalities. Now when we choose that, do we mean that, yes, there must be few who are bringing the skandha and therefore feel they are naturally inclined towards acting and sports and all that. But a lot of them, they go because we have given a lot of importance and prestige is attached to these fields. So really speaking, what I am choosing is not what I am choosing. I'm choosing because I am supposed to choose that. I'm choosing because it has got a sanction and approval of majority of people. I'm choosing because these things are looked up to with a kind of prestige attached to them. So really speaking, the choices I'm making are not my choices. I am, in a way, from the back, guided by majority's opinion and majority of people. And therefore, if you see in bigger matters, this is the same thing which goes on. If you see science, if you see religion, if you see customs, if you see tradition, and the choices that we make, we feel that we have made the choice. And HPB says no. Do you mean to say all these people who go to church and temple, they are going because they are getting something, or they love to go there, or they learn something? No, because the neighbors are going, because the other people are going. And if I don't do that, I will be isolated. I will be separated out. I don't want to flow against the stream. And that is why we do what the majority is doing. In a way, what we are doing is following a herd instinct. Cultivating our own opinions. And you think that you have thought about it. Based on what? Based on newspaper column? Based on what the people, leading people say on television? My views are not my views. I have not done any kind of independent thinking. What opinion and conclusion I arrive at is based on thinking of lots of other people, which I have culled together and come to this conclusion. So where is that independence in arriving at my views? Where is that independence in arriving at any ideology? It's not my own at all. And this becomes therefore very dangerous. In a sense, we are following either the herd instinct or we are following the choice majority, the leaders. And sometimes it becomes blind leading the blind. If the leaders are not enlightened, we are simply following them. And therefore we say, it is Gadaryo Prava. It said about the sheep, that one sheep goes in one direction, the other one goes, and the whole flock of sheep goes there. And maybe if he falls into water, all will fall into water. Maybe that doesn't happen, but by Gadaryo Prava, that is what you mean. If one person goes, all go in that direction. And where the majority is there, you also do. So in making choices, do we really pause and think that if this is true, this is good or not? Dhammapada is talking about choosing between Shreyas and Preyas. And today the whole world is choosing Preyas. Things which are of a lesser worth, but which gives you physical comfort, physical pleasure, physical amenities and so on. Money is everything and comfort is everything, luxury is everything. You choose everything which will give you more and more comfort and luxury. That is Preyas. Do we really think about Shreyas? That which is a pleasure of greater worth. That which comes at some price. That which comes at some inconvenience. It is very good that I will get even with a person. He hits me, I hit back, and then go home triumphant that finally I silenced him. But what about the pleasure of keeping quiet, listening to him, mentally forgiving the person and going home? The peace I have is a different kind of happiness and peace. I deprive myself of my lunch because I see the person seems to be very hungry. He's become very frail. I give my lunch box, that is to say the food, and I go without food. Instead of enjoying my food and feeling happy, I give someone, go hungry, and feel a different joy of having sacrificed something. This is called Shreyas. And Shreyas doesn't come without sacrifice, doesn't come without inconvenience. Do we make these kind of choices? I'm an independent person. We are not. We are hypnotized people. Thoroughly hypnotized people, though we may not have a hypnotizer in front of us, the majority is around us. The astral light with thoughts, actions, feelings, desires of people of our generation and maybe slightly previous generation are bombarding us with certain set of religious ideas, certain set of materialistic ideas. And we have to throw them back by doing our independent thinking. And that is the pity. We are not doing that independent thinking, and that's why Mr. Crosby, he puts it, that we are very, very suggestible. From the time we are born to the time we grow up, we keep absorbing suggestions. So from our birth, we are surrounded by those who suggest certain ideas to us as true. And we follow these suggested ideas. There is very little original thinking and thought anywhere. And particularly is this true in those lines to which public pays the most attention. Where? That is politics, religion, science. Whatever system of thought is presented to us, that we adopt. We follow the suggestion given with no attempt to reach basis of that which is suggested. So the suggestion comes, the Pandit, the Purohit says something and we do. But do we really ask, why should I do it? You kill a cat and you make a cat of gold and offer it to deity and your sin will be washed away. Do we ever ask that, how can that be? Can you please explain? Can that cat come alive again? Or what is it? Like we were seeing on Friday, a murderer is absolved because maybe he takes a dip in the Ganga or he confesses his sin. It doesn't make sense. What is the basis? So we are told that in theosophy also there are suggestions. But the masters of wisdom have also given us means of verifying whatever they suggest. There are rational arguments given for you to believe in reincarnation. It doesn't say, you better take it because it comes from the mouth of the masters. So, that work is something which we need to do. We are not saying the scriptures are wrong. We are not saying every time the Pandit is wrong or Maybe the priest is wrong. But have we made our own effort to verify what he says? Otherwise, then why do we say independent thinking? It is not at all independent thinking. It is simply absorbing the suggestions coming from all directions. And then, like an erudite, scholarly person, we rattle out opinions of people who have done their own spade work and thinking, which we have not done. It's a ready-made material which we are giving. This has become a very, very grave problem. For some people, it is science bombarding from one side and religion bombarding from another side. And therefore, we have to take our steps very carefully. Religion says there is a personal God and science says there is no God at all. And very rational kind of argument may be given. And then we realize that just like the person guiding us in making decision has rationality and intuition, I need also to develop rationality and heart response. Let me ask my heart, like Einstein asked, don't please ask me that is there a God or not? I won't answer you in yes or no, but I will say, the way I see order around me, like the books which are very well arranged in library, and a child seeing it says, there must be someone's intelligence in arranging the books. Like that, when I look at the orderly universe, I say, there must be someone's intelligence behind the universe. Do we think like Einstein? He's not saying there is this kind of God or that kind of God, but it is a very good enough decision to say that there is some intelligence, there is some power. Instead of saying, there is no God, then how are we going to explain the existence of the world, the existence of our earth and the order which is on the earth? So, independence is a very nice word. But as we go deeper into independence, we find we are not independent. We are, in one sense, slaves. We are, in one sense, aping. We are, in one sense, blindly following. And therefore, you have people like Ralph Waldo Emerson, who says, it is easy in the world to live after world's opinion. It is easy in the solitude to live after our own opinion. But the great man is he who, in the midst of crowd, keeps with perfect sweetness the independence of solitude. This is a very different thing, and this relates to society. Society has customs, society has traditions, society has values. Do you dare to go against society? You are ostracized, you are thrown away, you are excommunicated. These things have happened to people who went against certain things in their religion, certain things in their society, certain custom and tradition which they refused to follow. They were thrown away, in the sense, thrown out of caste and so on. Do I dare? I dare, yes, to maintain my own views when I am alone. But the moment I am in a crowd and the whole crowd says one thing, I say, yeah, maybe I think you people are right. And my own opinion will be in the background. And Emerson says, that's not the great thing. The great man is he who, even in the midst of the crowd, with perfect sweetness, he maintains independence of solitude. That is, he refuses to be cowed down or influenced by the opinion of the crowd. He's not going to fight with them. He was not going to get into argument. But he says, I think differently, sorry, and keep quiet. With perfect sweetness, that is an art. Without really arousing other people's anger, with sweetness, you kind of distance yourself. That's what, by the way, in a way, Gita seems to be saying, that there is want of pleasure in congregation of men. Want of pleasure. And that means I'm not dependent on these people. Yes, it's very good if they are there. But if they are not there, and if they are not going to accept me, come ye out from among them and be ye separate. And more often than not, the one genuinely walking spiritual path is going to come to that state of being isolated. Not because he is shunned by others, But in many, many things, he is going to think so differently from the general run of humanity, as it is said. Are we willing to be isolated in a very different sense? That is then where we are beginning to assert our independence, not by making someone unhappy knowingly, but all the same, maintain our independence. Still more difficult when it comes to emotional independence. Emotions is something for which we are certainly dependent on people around. We want people's approval, we want people's praise, we want people's affection, we want people's love. And the interesting part is that when all these things are there, we think that we are independent, but as very rightly it is said by one author, that you evaluate your relationships and you ask yourself, what is the most important relationship? And if the answer is that that most important relationship is a certain person, you can be sure that misery is going to come. Because either that person will one day go away, or you, by being dependent on that person, by having that emotional relationship and seeing this is the most important person, you have given remote control of yourself in his hand. So if this person responds in a certain way, you will feel disappointed. If he responds in another way, you will feel that doesn't care for me much, doesn't appreciate me much, doesn't love me much. In so many ways, the remote is in his hands or her hand. You will depend upon how the person responds. Now, this other, the relationship which you have, the most important relationship, if the answer is, it is with my own inner self. And she says, then you will be happy. If my most important relationship is with my own divine nature, then I am going to be happy. Now that doesn't mean I am not going to have relations with others. And in fact, you will find that when you have a very good relation with your own inner self, you have a kind of right relation with your own inner self, you are going to see other relationships in a very different, in a very exalted way. The same nagging mother-in-law was very irksome for you. But now you have built the rapport with your own inner nature, and now you see that mother-in-law as simply a nimitta matram, an instrument, an agent of karma, who has come to you because she is nagging. I am getting an opportunity to learn, maybe patience, maybe calmness, maybe to accept a person like that. So, this is one opportunity that I have. Boss in the office who is a perfectionist, wants perfect work. And if I am not, all the time I would be scared, I will be afraid of his shouting, I would not want to go to him. And the moment I have right relation with me, my own higher self, I will now learn to see him as a good thing that happened. I will learn to do my work neatly, more perfectly, and I will improve and try to be a professional in whatever career I have taken. So the whole outlook will change. All the other relationships will smoothen out because of the right relationship. And what we will find is a certain steady center within ourselves. Otherwise, in emotional relationship, there is a certain leaning. There is certain expectation of getting something from people, whether it is affection, support, a shoulder to cry on. Now, instead of being a receiver, I will become a giver, because I have become self-reliant. I have become self-dependent. I have become more courageous and a strong person. I will now give my shoulder, my ear, my sympathy to other people who can now lean on me. And that comes because I have a right relationship with my own inner nature. And this, of course, we do by slowly and gradually. On the one hand, realizing that every little thing in an emotional relationship is not required to be shared. Mainly, if you see, emotional relationship consists in at least sharing things. You go to office, you come back, and mostly, if something has happened with a friend, if something has happened with a boss, you want to rattle out to your sister, your wife, your child, whoever is there, and you want to say, somehow, when they say, I think you are right, that person did not treat you well, and there is some satisfaction of justifying the stand I had taken, or at least having what they call catharsis, of having it out. This is very harmless, or looks harmless. But is this the way in which the person who wants to walk spiritual path has to go around? Sharing every little thing, the hurt, the good things you have done, the conversation you had with your friends, the incidents which happened around you. And the answer is no, unfortunately. So, here we have to slowly learn to keep things to ourselves. And therefore, at the physical level, as Mr. Crosby has said, how will you cultivate self-dependence? And here self is only your personal self. He says, the very second quotation, never ask another to do for you what you can do yourself. If you can do that work, don't ask another to do that. Know where your things are and get them for yourself when you need them. Can you get me my purse? Can you please get me? No. I mean, this is very harmless, but see, when you are used to doing it, you are becoming lazy and you are becoming almost a parasite. If someone is not around, now it will be a mighty difficult thing to get up and get my things. Mighty difficult, because you are so used to asking, whether it is servant or a child or someone else, get me this and get me that. Self-dependence, a little beginning which has to be made, is to be made from here. Do for others all you can in a nice way, but do not expect others to do for you. You are valuable only when you are helpful, not when you require help. This is like a shock. Most of the time, if we have helped people financially, emotionally, or just been a support in doing things for them, when my turn came, she turned away her face. She was nowhere to be seen. She never even asked me, do you need help? This is a very human reaction. But we are not talking about ordinary human beings. Why are we having this lecture? We are having this lecture to see, as we move on, what is this other dependence? How are we going to spell that other dependence so that we don't become miserable like an ordinary person who is a man of the world? That other dependence we are going to decrease in as many areas as possible. And this is a very small area. It's something which the student also saw about her own mother. Even at a very old age, she would herself get up, go to that place and get that knife and then start cutting vegetables. If you are standing, she won't say, give me. The student doesn't really remember when she told, can you give me that? She would somehow walk, go there, get the thing. You see, this was the practice. Simple people, but the practice of not to bother someone and be self-dependent. Come to the other part of being self-dependent, and it's not here, but we are told by Mr. Judge, do all your crying and sighing within you. Do all your crying and sighing within you. If you cannot take ordinary difficulties of life without telling and announcing to all people, do you think that you are ripe and ready to get occult secrets or mysteries and knowledge of mysteries? The first thing you will do is tell about it to all the people. So, here, what we are required to do, one, be self-dependent means depend on your own personal self. And two, be self-dependent means depend on your own divine or spiritual self. And that spiritual self-dependence doesn't come like that. No wonder. Every teacher will tell you that do what you want, have what career you have, but in the entire day, please, please, you make time for meditation. Because when we are working, as Sri B.P. Wadia suggests, between two works, he says, you finished one work, you are moving on to other, just sit quietly and remember some verse from the Voice of the Silence, from the Gita. And he says, this is the very good way of connecting yourself with your higher nature. Because otherwise, in the rush and hurry of life, we don't even think there is someone, something inside of me wanting to tell me something. So, this kind of going away from the worldly things to otherworldly thing can be done by between two chores, between two works, a minute or two must be spent in remembering some verse from a scripture, from Gita, from the Voice of the Silence. And that moment you don't realize, but you have gone closer to your higher nature. This is a very small step. A very definite step is taken when we set apart half an hour. People do talk about me time, my space. This is my space, my spiritual space, which I am not ever going to allow anyone to encroach upon. We don't say that. Today I was so tired, so I did not sit for meditation. We won't say that today I was so tired, so I did not watch television or did not check up my WhatsApp messages. No, but I could not sit for meditation. So this has not got priority with us. If we give that priority, only and only then can you make that communication. We do talk about cultivation of friendship. This little children's book, in a way, and for adults also, called The Little Prince. It's really developing the story by talking about the prince, understanding how to cultivate friendship by understanding how to cultivate a plant. A plant doesn't grow just like that. You have to do what we call maujat, you know. You have to take care of it, water it properly, put it in sometimes in sunlight and not. That author is saying that's what is required in cultivation of a friendship. Some friendships are just made because you have past connection, but others are cultivated with effort. You shower your affection, you shower your attention, you give time, you give effort. Then slowly we say, over a period of years, this friendship flowered or developed. So also the friendship with your higher nature. Sri Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, you know, I am the Lord, the Comforter, the Witness, the Resting Place, the Asylum and the Friend. All in one package deal. You have everything in one. But who wants that friend? We still look outside. This is the friend who will guide us in more than one ways. And that is worth developing. The friendship with this inner ruler, this inner friend, the divine self in us. Spend half an hour every day and you can develop that friendship. So, other dependence is misery, self-dependence is bliss, and that is both outer and inner self. So, ultimately, what are we supposed to do? We are supposed to slowly go to that stage when there is complete self-dependence with capital S, where we have a complete rapport with our divine nature. But that doesn't happen by running away from what we call interdependence, by running away from making our own contribution to the world. It happens by being in the world but not being off the world. And this is a very beautiful quotation from this lady called Peace Pilgrim. She says, no one is truly free who is still attached to material things or to places or to people. We must be able to use things when we need them and then relinquish them without regret when they have outlived their usefulness. We must be able to appreciate and enjoy the places where we tarry and yet pass on without anguish when we are called elsewhere. Anything that you strive to hold captive will hold you captive. And if you desire freedom, you must give freedom. So, If it is there today, I enjoy. I enjoy company of people. I take help of people. I take help of the equipments. But if tomorrow any and all are missing, I am still at peace. I am still happy. I can still manage. That is what is the real independence and dependence. Combined in a very kind of equilibrium or in a balanced way. And that is why Sri B.P. Wadia, that will be the last thought in his one of his articles, he is pointing out that what is this which we call philosophical anarchism? We all want, in a way, in a wrong way, anarchy. No government, no rules, no laws. I can take care of myself as the child grows. I know. I can take care. You don't have to impose all rules on me. We all want that, right? But this is philosophical anarchism. And he says that anarchism, that you decide for yourself what is good or bad, comes when you have had experience. You have had learning of lessons by first involving yourself in what the Maharashtrians call prapancha samsara. So there are different institutions. There is a family, which is one institution. There is your community and society, which is another institution. Nation is a third institution. And he says, like a child going in the playground and mixing with other children and learning the rules of the game, we also get entwined and we also get involved in the family institution where we learn to cooperate with a few people, sacrifice, learn to adjust and adapt ourselves to few natures, and then we move on. And we learn to cooperate with more natures in society and community, and some more in nation, and when we come to the whole human race. So gradually what you have done, you are having experience after experience in a larger group of people, variety of temperaments, variety of human nature, Tulsi it sansar mein bhat bhat ke log. And as you see them, you also imbibe certain virtues. Each institution has particular virtues to really give to you, particular lessons to teach to you. And when those are learned, he says, you become a lawless citizen, belonging as it were to the whole world. Now you have unfolded your divinity to the complete, and therefore you don't require any rules because you know what is right and what is wrong. And yet you freely mingle with people without interfering in their affairs. So somewhere we are given the definition of a positive freedom. There is a state of positive freedom in which the individual exists as an independent self, yet he is united with other men, with world and nature. So this is a stage towards which we, when we come to the right philosophy, we should strive to move. Because always, even when you become a Buddha, you don't become independent so as to isolate yourself from humanity. Even then, it's a mixture of independence and dependence. We have maybe time for one question. Yes, this is inevitable, as we said, dependence and independence. This is only one small phase of your life, which may last maybe a few years also sometimes, that in the old age or when you are handicapped, you become bedridden or whatever it is, and you are completely dependent on other person. That is only a small patch of your life. All your life, you are not dependent. Maybe very many number of years you are dependent. People remain in coma for 17 years, 15 years, 12 years, 10 years, God forbid, but that can happen. But that's still only one out of many, many lifetimes. That is a one-off case. That is one separate part of the whole of existence. So what we said applies to all the normal condition for most of us. But this kind of a situation is giving us an opportunity of learning from dependence. What did we say? It is not as if we can do away with dependence. Yes, right now we don't mean to be parasite, but we have to become parasite. Because the situation is such that I just cannot do anything at all. Sometimes people are completely paralyzed. It's not just old age. Old age also people, if you see, they will try to do as much as they can to give minimum trouble to others. There are old people and old people. Each one differs from the other. There are some who have just given up. What we call as servile character and servile status. And there are those whose character is still maintaining independence, so they will try to see in what all ways can I minimize the trouble which I can give to my child, to the one who is taking care of me. This is more than enough. You can't do more than that. Two, give the response and not reaction. Because it is bound to happen that the person who is serving you may sometimes feel irritated, may sometimes not. They might love you very much, and yet at times they are not able to give you the same care which they generally have been giving. They have their own problems because of which they are anxious and therefore not able to give you the kind of treatment they are normally giving. Those are instances which should not make you bitter. Those are instances which you should reflect and say, maybe she has her own problems or he has his own problems. I won't take it to heart. I will be grateful that I have someone to take care of me. And supposing you happen to be in an old age home, yet another situation. Perpetually you might find someone who is a caretaker and who is just not disposed to taking care of you properly. Then also, what counts here is, what is my response to the situation? Here, the important thing is, do I allow myself to become miserable? Because the dependence is not what I have chosen. I can do it and yet I am becoming dependent. So the case is very different. In other cases, we allow ourselves to be different. Here, I am not purposely doing it. I am put in that situation. So the only thing in my hand is response to the situation. Do I allow myself to become miserable even then? Or I say, it is okay. This also is part of life. I have seen good treatment can be given and bad treatment can be given. So let him give bad treatment, but I will take it in stride. And you will not even complain if your children come to see you in your old age home where they are not able to take care and they have put you, and you pass through it. So it's a very, very complex situation, and each situation would have many, many applications. But this was just the general thing which is applicable to people in general. But every situation where you have dependence, sometimes there is financial dependence, sometimes it is physical dependence, sometimes it is even emotional dependence. And then, what are you going to do? And how are you going to handle? Don't allow yourself to become miserable. Take it as your karma, that it is my karma to be dependent like this, and then take the treatment which is given to me by another person. I will keep my cheer, and that you can do only and only when you have made that rapport to a certain extent with your divine nature. Because you do see some people who are on the path, and their reaction, or rather response, is very different. And our response, or rather reaction, is very different. You wonder how they manage in a situation like this. Not a line comes on the forehead of anxiety or anger or dislike, as if they are in complete comfort. When can you do that? As that author rightly says, when you are in right relationship with your inner self, you are in right relationship with everyone that comes in your life. This is very important. The time has exceeded. Thank you.